All right. Well, thanks for inviting me, Kevin. And I guess I'm launched into this in the last show before lunch here. So I thought I'd give you my take-homes right away. And that way, you know, if you're hungry or if you're just tired of being cold, you can leave after this slide. So I think of T3 as a collaboration tool. That is bringing together the data from everybody in the project. And that makes it easy to, you know, mix and match data, consolidate, integrate. And so, you know, I just want to make the point that, yes, a central database can facilitate that collaboration. If you want your data to have impact, you want to make it public. And so within T3, the group that works on T3, we've tried to emphasize that. And right now, there is no real mechanism within T3 to keep data private. As soon as you submit it, it's available to everyone. But that has advantages for you, too. So I'll talk about all this going forward. For those of you who aren't part of TCAP, I have a few slides just sort of describing T3. So there's, again, it's the central database for all of the data, you know, genomic and phenotypic, generated by TCAP. So it's a way of publishing data, making it public. And there's a side for barley and a side for wheat. So that's sort of what it is. And in fact, the human component is very important. These are the people who develop and curate T3. Some of them are supported ongoingly by USDARS, Dave Matthews and Dave Hain in particular. The mandates are, again, to be the central organization, curation, integration, way of for people all around the project to retrieve their data easily. We don't want to be, you know, exchanging Excel spreadsheets over email or whatever. It can also serve as a teaching tool. Databases are clearly more and more important regardless of where you go, and so students, you know, have the opportunity to use this. We'd like T3 to also be a hub that links to other resources and information sources in wheat and barley. So, for example, if you come across a marker that's now of interest, it's easy to link from T3 to the grain genes information about that marker. T3 has actually served as a mechanism of data publication for other grants besides TCAP. Funding agencies now often require that if they're going to pay you to do this research, that the data that comes out of it be made public. So you can do that through T3. So just a rundown, there is a lot of data in T3. I mean, I guess there's a lot of data all over in the world, but particularly for phenotyping trials that are now more and more difficult and that are sort of the limiting step, we have a lot of those trials. A number of genotyping trials, so genotyping trials are the types of things that Gina runs. Give or take 10 to 15,000 lines, breeding lines that are both in barley and wheat that are documented and for which we have data. It amounts to a lot of individual phenotypic data points and of course even more genotypic data points. So it's important for people to be able to retrieve this data easily. So, you know, there's a web interface that provides a number of different ways of querying the data and assembling it. That has to be made simple. And then we also have been developing and putting together a number of different ways of analyzing the data. For myself, I work on statistical method development, and so my ideal for T3 is that it's a way for me to make my methods also easily publicly available. Then obviously people want to retrieve that data. They don't want to just be able to select it. They want to be able to bring it back to their own desktops to work with it. And there's a number of methods for that. So T3 is funded by TCAP. It's had a couple of spin-offs. The OAT community has actually put forward some money for an OAT curator to bring OAT data into an OAT version of T3. The Wheat Uniform Nurseries, this is funded by the SCAB initiative. And so there's a database now that has no genotypic data, but that has all of the phenotypes from the uniform SCAB nurseries. Okay, so I've talked about T3 as this collaboration tool and a mechanism essentially of accumulating data, and I just have a little vignette example of T3 doing its job in that sense. So the trait I'm working with is maybe not the most important. I don't know, I guess it's important for malting folks, but so it's breeder's plum grain. I guess Kevin could define that. I'm not even entirely sure how you measure it, but starting from the beginning of the barley coordinated agricultural project era, so this was, I guess, by the second year of the barley cap, there were 500 lines evaluated over about 2,000 plots, and you can do a GWAS, and there's essentially no signal. You can see that the QQ plot with the expected minus log p-value on the x-axis and the observed minus log p-value on the y-axis is basically follows the expectation, and in the Manhattan plot, there's no signal. Move to 1 year later. This is the early enthusiastic stage of the barley cap when a lot of new lines were being put forward and evaluated. You can see maybe in the QQ plot there's a little bit more signal, right? The observed p-values are starting to deviate from their expectation. Still nothing of genome-wide significance, although the scale on the y-axis of this minus log p-value is going slightly up. Finally, we arrive at today. And sure enough, okay, so I wouldn't be giving you this example if it didn't work at some level. We have some genome-wide significant hits. And this essentially comes from having more lines evaluated in more plots. And that's essentially a function that that T3 can serve. It sort of provides historical continuity that enables ever larger analyses to be done. So we're at a level of going on 1,400 lines. In the human genetics community, they've of course are working with much larger data sets, but they still emphasize that even once you've had a GWAS, this was for human height, with 130,000 samples, and then you move to almost double that, to 253,000 samples, that there's value to be had in increasing these sizes. They have a lot of pretty cool ways of interpreting their GWAS hits. They can bring them into what they call pathways and genomic loci, but there too, they're emphasizing the importance of public availability of data. So I don't, you know, it'll be a while before we hit 250,000 samples, although with these large NAM populations, you know, we're gonna soon have a large bump in the size of the data generated by the communities that we work with. So I want to move on to a different example of where something like T3 can be very useful, and that's related to the topic of the symposium, which is trying to start to predict, not just estimate in retrospect, but predict going forward the effects of climate stress. So the problem is sort of posed in this way, that in columns you have stress covariates. So this could be drought at a particular growth stage of the plant. And you can evaluate these stress covariates in a number of different environments. So I'm saying T environments and Q stress covariates. And what you have to realize is that the environments are really the units of observation, because in any single environment, all of the stress covariates have the same value, regardless of the individual that you're working with. So you have a problem of collinearity, that is, you can imagine that it's possible with all of the weather variables that we have to generate or think of many, many different types of stress covariates that you want to look at. And so the number of environments is generally going to be smaller than the number of stress covariates that you have. this is a problem because it means, you know, collinearity among the stress covariates and a difficulty in teasing out which ones are important. So regardless of what you do, maybe T is going to be smaller than Q, but the basic message is you want to have T as big as possible. And so you want to accumulate data over time. Mark and I were fortunate enough to have a student, Nicholas Heslow, who was working with private data and who really jumps out into the void to work on these problems, starting from scratch. And these are the types of stress covariates, you know, different growth stages and different types of weather-related issues that he worked with to generate ultimately 101 different stress covariates. So these were the data that he had in hand, large data set, again, coming from a company. But clearly, the number of environments was going to be smaller than the number of stress covariates. So he had 44 environments. But it's even worse than that because, you know, you want to show whether your method is working. So you have to split your environment into training environments that allow you to estimate the effects of these stress covariates and then validation environments to see whether you get any improved prediction accuracy. It turns out with a lot of effort on the computational side, the analytical methodology side, Nicolas was able to make this work. So on the x-axis, you have an environment and prediction accuracy with a baseline model that doesn't include any G by E. And then on the y-axis, you have the same environments, but now predicted with a model that includes some analysis of the G by E. And you see that most of the dots, in fact, 15 of the dots out of 22, are above that identity line. So that was exciting to us, but it's important to think about in the context of T3 as to why did this work. And so the point is, A, these data weren't collected for a specific research project. They were collected for breeding. In other words, the data were in some ways subsidized by a different activity. So these environments accumulated over time. More environments would have been better. So the more time passes, the more data that we want to have together. And last but not least, all of the data were easily assembled. They weren't in disparate folders across some kind of backup drive. They were easy to put together by database queries. So without something like T3, this project would have been quite difficult to handle. So I think this point, this take-home message is quite obvious, but I've just put together a couple ideas or a couple I was just brainstorming about, okay, what public data sets do I know that have really made a difference? Gina mentioned the Illumina SNP array that the Barley Cap initially used, and it was only possible because there was a large public EST resource that was available and that Tim Close knew how to put to use to extract those SNPs. I think the Barley community has been particularly good in this regard, and very early on in the early 90s, with the start of QTL mapping, they were quick to make those double haploid populations and the full set of data associated with them publicly available. And so this is going on 20 years after those data sets were made available. They're still being used for method development. So a postdoc that Mark and I had, Jeff Endelman, was working on optimal design for preliminary yield trials using prediction, and he used this Harrington by TR population. And then the last example that I want to give here is genomic selection in dairy cattle, where in dairy cattle there's been a long history of making milking records available to USDA. It's actually the Animal Improvement Program labs that's in Beltsville, because you know the process of predicting the breeding value of a bull for milk yield is complicated, right? You can't just measure milk yield on a bull. So the people at the Animal Improvement Lab have developed, you know, essentially the mixed model type analyses that we now use frequently for GWAS. Those have been used, you know, without the marker data, but in dairy cattle for a long time. And it required the data to be assembled. And because that data was assembled very early on, once the marker capabilities were available for genomic selection, they had, you know, very excellent results of empirical proof of concept that genomic selection would be used in dairy, it would be valuable in dairy cattle. And as a result, starting, you know, in already in 2009-2010, dairy farmers were buying semen from bulls on the basis of predictions as opposed to the basis of daughter or progeny testing. So if you want your data to have impact, make it public. So a couple other examples directly from barley or TCAP involves just pooling data from a lot of different programs. So pretty early on in the barley CAP, we had you know, a paper on linkage disequilibrium in U.S. barley. So this was across a number of breeding programs. And this is just a reference from the literature that I pulled out more recently, where they also evaluated all of the barley CAP data. Now, I don't know whether they specifically used T3 in assembling the data. Maybe you could, but all of that data was used in this project. So, okay, so now I want to get to the part about, okay, so using T3 isn't just altruistic, it isn't just good for public service. In principle, there are some breeding management tools that are available in T3 that it can allow you, for example, to map trends over your field plots. So just a few things that once you put your data into a computational environment, you know, it's on a server with a lot of cores, we can do some interesting computational things. You can use some tools and actually request from us some tools if you have ideas that may help you with your breeding management. So so sort of nice visualization tools. And now we're trying to set up T3 so that it can generate experimental designs and do spatially explicit, or, you know, basically generate field maps. And the advantage of that is that it'll be able to do spatial analyses, so correlated error deviations as a function of the distance between plots. So these are the types of tools that are maybe less easy for breeders to access if they don't have their data in, you know, in a kind of data-rich, analysis-rich environment. And so now I want to take a step back from this "what's in it for me" thing and think again about the fact that we are, for the most part, all public sector breeders, and we want our data to have impact. And again, making the data public is what's mattered. So even if there's not a whole lot in it for you, it's maybe worth thinking about and doing it. And just to follow up on that, T3 is not unique in this sort of sector of database options for breeding. There's the integrated breeding programs, breeding management system. There's also this Phenome Networks Project Unity. So these are both setups that allow you to store your data in databases and make it public. So I don't want to, I mean, I think the broader context of what I want to say, okay, so it was again pioneered by human genetics people for example, the release of the human reference sequence, the human genome reference sequence, and they've just found that releasing this data ahead of time, even before publication, really increases the value of the data. So I'm calling this the old model, but I don't want to make that pejorative. You know, it's still important to analyze and understand your data and then distribute it. But another possibility is to, you know, curate your data, make sure that it makes sense, make it available, and then analyze it. And so I think this is the direction that is, you know, also being pushed by TCAP. There's a lot of data on T3 that hasn't formally yet been published. We have a data usage policy that allows you to declare what your publication interests are on your data, and then you rely on the goodwill of people using T3 to not try to scoop you. But so I think this is an important model for how we go about using data and publishing data going forward. And so that's really my main take-home message is think about this and see how it can work in your program. And that's it for discussion.
Question.
Todd. Whatever you put there is public, but I mean, I think Kevin does that routinely.
Yeah, we routinely put almost all of our data into the database.
So instead of something like Aggravate, something like that, the green community they want to use T3,
Yeah. So there are a few steps to getting your data in T3. We have what's called a sandbox. Just to make sure that your data is going to load easily, you load it onto this sandbox, which is a replica of T3, but it's not the production version. And then once it loads easily, you send it off to the data curator, who's Vic Blake, and she'll load it. So it's not onerous, but there are a few steps. Yeah. Other questions? All right.